This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast, where I talk to my guests about the joys they've experienced in sobriety, because we all know going sober isn't easy, but it does make life a lot easier. And today I'm talking to Sue about her sobriety, and she talks to me about how grateful she feels now in her life, how she's looking after herself better, and how much she's enjoying the extra time. Sue, hello. How are you?
Really good. Very good. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's amazing to see you.
Well, I'm really, really excited to do this since you asked me. Yeah, let's get cracking.
Let's get cracking. Okay, well, over to you. You share whatever you'd like to about your sober story.
So I suppose I should just start by saying I'm 48, nearly 49. I live in Newcastle upon Tyne. Where it turned sour for me with alcohol was probably, well, things escalated during lockdown. So previously, if I just go back, I was a product of the 90s drinking culture. So as a teenager, you know, that's when I think probably things started to change for women drinking. I'd done all that with the girls out. Probably, well, definitely was a binge drinker, but that was fine because you could switch it on, you could switch it off. I then progressed into my 20s. Had a child, so obviously that was 9 months of being sober, which was absolutely fine, didn't bother me at all. I breastfed my son for a full year, so again, that was, so basically I had kind of nearly 2 years of not drinking during that time. And anyone who knows me will know that I sometimes take on crazy challenges with exercise, therefore drinking was never really a massive part of my life. Had been a smoker since school days, probably started smoking when I was 14, and that was my addiction that I just couldn't stop. And although people used to tell me and nag me to stop, it was never something that I wanted to do. And then all of a sudden, I remember the day quite clearly. It was February 9th, 2018, and I was out with a friend, and you know, smoking had got less acceptable, and I'd run out of cigarettes on a night out. Now that would never happen, and I just decided from that point on I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I carried on just doing my social drinking, not a problem. And then kind of lockdown hit. And I know this isn't an excuse because I know we all had to go through that time. For me, I've kind of lived my life not feeling enough or not never good enough for anything. And I think, God, I'm going to get upset.
That's okay. Take your time. It's a big thing, isn't it? That not feeling good enough.
Yeah. I think kind of because obviously we were taken away from everyone, it really gave you time to probably focus on the negative things because you didn't have the opportunities to go out. And although I was in a relationship, we didn't live together. So we weren't initially, you know, we couldn't see each other or spend time together, which was really hard. So I have had traumatic experiences in my life, quite a few. And again, I know this isn't anything new, and a lot of people have traumas or difficult situations to deal with. But I think because I've been so focused on raising my son, I'm a single parent, and I went back to university to study to get a degree because it was important to me that I didn't let my son down, that he had everything that he needed, and he shouldn't be disadvantaged by only having one parent. And I think I just managed to block everything out. Like I say, until this time, I've gone through, I mean, I was lucky because I managed to work the whole way through lockdown, whether it be from home or sometimes working away, which again in itself was difficult because it was very isolating. staying in hotels was no fun during lockdown. Breakfast delivered in a brown bag and left outside your door and not being able to do anything. So I was lucky in that instance, but the downside for me was that kind of isolation and how it started getting my brain going through all of these things. And the impact, or what I found was the thing that quietened all the noise down, was to have a drink. And it soon escalated from not having an issue with drinking to wanting to kind of drink every single day. And it was quite easy to smuggle drink into the house. I say smuggle. So I lived with my mum and my son, but I was responsible for doing all the shopping. So I could buy as much booze as I want, just leave it in the car. It's only me who uses the car. And yeah, quickly escalated and went downhill. And I've always functioned. I've always got up for work. I've always done my work. I've always exercised. But something was nagging and nagging away. And the more I was drinking, the more kind of anxious I was becoming, and the more I was worried about things. And the way my brain works is it'll often just catastrophize things. So the smallest thing can, I can make that into this huge catastrophe, and I'll worry about 2 or 3 months down the line and what's going to happen. And I was just driving myself insane. Towards the end of 2022, it's probably where I kind of started to get to my rock bottom, if you like.
Yeah.
I was in a really, really bad place. I was struggling with sleep. And yourself, it's like you pick on one thing and you think that is the reason. That is the reason why. But really, to me, it's just like a huge jigsaw. And if all the pieces aren't there, or if one piece is missing, the whole thing, just your whole life can just really go off track. So for me, it was, not sleeping. The more anxious I was getting, I was finding the less I was sleeping. I was waking up at stupid o'clock in the morning, filled with dread. And those times where you look at your phone and then it's the shame and the guilt and everything else. And I got in a really bad place, and it would never happen now, but probably where I just thought, I just don't want to do this anymore. I couldn't speak to my partner at the time because I'd been so awful over Christmas and the new year that he'd actually blocked me. And I was desperately wanted to talk to him. And rightfully so. I fully respect what he'd done, because he has to, well, he had at that time to look after himself as well. And why would you leave yourself open to be abused for no reason? But I actually managed to speak to a very close friend who's not in the area. And he recognized that I was in a pretty rough place. He probably saved my life on that day, and I owe him loads. And it was like sort of that made me realize there was a huge problem. So I went to the doctors and I was like, you need to give me something. I can't sleep. I was like, I think I need antidepressants. I was like struggling. And he was like, no, we went through all these things. And he said, I think you're starting, or you're in perimenopause. So he's like, I don't think you need antidepressants. I think you just need HRT. So we'll get you started. He never once mentioned alcohol. It was me who brought it up. And I said, look, I really think I've got a problem with alcohol. I said, I'm binge drinking sometimes to the point of blackout. And I reeled off this whole list of things, even being, and nobody probably does this, be totally honest with the amount of units that were drinking on average per week. And his words to me were, oh, you haven't got a problem. You just need to cut down. And I remember kind of swearing in my own brain and thinking, well, I'm sat here telling you I've got an issue, and yet you're telling me just to cut down. If it was that still, then don't you think I'd have tried that already?
Yeah.
So I kind of went away. Obviously my son was worried about me, my partner was worried about me, my mum was worried about me. had to communicate with my partner at the time via email. That was the only way I could contact him. And I said, look, this is the problem. This is what's going on with my drinking. And I also had to email my sister because she'd been on the receiving end at times. And what makes it worse is she actually had lost her husband during lockdown due to alcohol. So I'm well aware of what one binge too many can do. That it literally can be the end for some people. So obviously I heaped all this extra stress onto my sister as well. But I felt so much better for getting it off my chest. But it was kind of once it was out in the open, I had to do something about it. But I think I approached everything so the wrong way. So I embarked on being sober, trying to do it on my own, trying to think there was this thing called willpower, which I don't actually think there's such a thing as willpower. Or if there is, it's not a magic pot that just keeps on giving, because there comes a point where that, to me, that just runs out completely. So I soldiered on. I am by nature a very stubborn person, and I think that helped initially. Managed to get to, oh, well over a year. I was well over a year, and I'd done sober holidays, I'd done sober weekends with like away. Things had kind of got back on track with my partner, and he was really, really happy, and we had a great holiday. And I mean, talking about holidays, that first, and this will probably make sense shortly, but that first holiday, sort of like a couple of days for a weekend's okay, but going away for a week, and it's when you've had those things of going to the airport and having a drink, being on the plane, having a drink. And I remember there was instances where I actually did sort of spit my dummy out because I felt like I wasn't allowed to have a drink. And this, to me, is where this is where I'd done things wrong the first time round, because I don't think I was doing it for myself. I was doing it, one, to prove a point, because I like to prove that I can do things. Two, I was doing it for the wrong reasons. I was doing it for other people and not for myself. And I used to be hell bent on counting days. I've got the apps on my phone, and every morning I'd want to update my app and track to see how I was doing. And I know there's a difference of opinion on this. Some people love to do it. I mean, I did in the first instance, but probably cut a long story short, Louisa, I had a massive relapse, catastrophic for me anyway. And I think things went wrong because I wasn't consistent. I wasn't doing any work, and certainly not the right work. I was relying on this thing called willpower and a bit of stubbornness mixed in. And I was counting days. So for me, and the goal was to be sober. Now I think it's fine to have goals. However, to me, thinking about it, a goal has an end point because you get to a point where you achieve something and then you've kind of ticked that off your list. And I think that's where I got to, and I allowed complacency to slip in. And I know you talk about this a lot, but it's that romanticizing. I forgot that time I was down by the River Tyne wanting to end things. I forgot about all the hurt I'd caused. I forgot about all the chaos and the destruction. And I think it just slowly crept back in. And I remembered sort of, and it's almost like my brain planned it. And I talked myself into it. It was like, you just have one, it'll be okay. But I remember pouring it and smelling it. And it's if anybody's stopped smoking, if you try a cigarette again, we smell cigarettes, the smell, you really, it doesn't smell like you remember it or tasting like you remember it tasting. And I remember smelling the glass and thinking, oh, this is awful. But I still went ahead and had that first sip. And it was, it's just like I just got swallowed back in. And very quickly, things escalated past the point I'd been the very first time, which was very, very frightening. But it soon became very real that once again I was in a bad place. Now, the only difference the second time round was because I could manage to string 2 days together, 3 days together, maybe four if I tried really hard. But it was so soul destroying. I was destroyed mentally for a second time round. by this thing that I just didn't want to do, but I was basically hooked.
Yeah.
And it was really, really difficult to take the blame for that. And I had to take the blame for that because I had the choice and I had the power to not do it. But the pull of alcohol was so much stronger. And I think because, not that I'm a weak person, but I think mentally, and because I hadn't done any work to make myself or to make that change and to make that habit stick, it was just missing. So now I know the importance of, and I mean, I've done so much work the second time around. I mean, I don't know because I don't track the days. I will go in and update apps and things, but I know I'm coming up since January 2023. I'm nearly on 800 days sober, which for me is a better way to look at things because I think that's, I've had a good run since January 23. Yes, there's been slips. However, in some ways I'm really grateful I had that really bad relapse because it taught me a lot of things. I'm not grateful because I did go on to create more chaos and more hurt and damage to people that I should never have done. But it allowed me to take a step back and to formulate a plan of how I was going to get myself out of this sort of hamster wheel I was stuck on. And for me, that was about looking out for people like yourselves, getting myself sort of communities where I could be part of. So I was working in the Northwest at the time, and I don't know where I'd seen your book, but I'd seen it, and I downloaded the book on Audible, listened to most of the book on a 3-hour drive, and I really related to you. And I remember when I got the end of the book, and this was August last year, I think.
Yeah.
And I just dropped you a message on Instagram saying how much I enjoyed it and everything. And then that worked itself up to me saying, right, I need something. I need somebody like this in my life. I need to be part of this, which that was one thing that I'd done. I found a guy locally in the Northeast. He's called Luke John Harrison. Doesn't do it. It's not about a sober group, but it's about building, again, it's about a separate community, but this is about mental fitness and well-being and physical. So it's mental, physical. He's a really positive guy. I do 3 classes a week with him. It's a really good, we've got a really good community of people there. And he gets it as well because I think he's 6 years sober from drink and drugs. So he knows what he's talking about. He knows how to be positive. He also contacted a local recovery group, which is a charity.
Yeah.
And I have had a lot of help from them. So they pointed me in the direction of groups called Smart Recovery, which you can do online. It's kind of like the new version of AA. Not it's not based on any principles of AA. It's totally free, but it's really good. And this is a lot of people coming together. You can just go online, you can search them up, you can join whatever meetings. You don't have to talk. You don't have to even put your camera on if you don't want to. But I've learned a lot about other people and other people's stories, and whether it be drug addiction or alcohol addiction or whatever it may be. So I've built myself a huge kind of foundation and platform to get better. And I've done a lot of work on myself. I've tried to understand more about me and what makes me tick and why in the past why I've reacted sometimes the way I've reacted. So that's all stuff that I work on now.
Yeah. Well done. I mean, isn't it interesting that we always hear stories where drinking became a problem when somebody was younger? And we don't often hear of stories where actually it became out of control or became a problem later on. But it does happen. Thank you for sharing that. And wow, there's so much there. You've just been so honest. And I am honoured to have played a very small part in supporting you. It's been an absolute honour, which is why I wanted to chat to you on here, because it is phenomenal, the change.
Yeah, I mean, I know obviously I'm part of your sober group as well that we do on Facebook. And I know one of the biggest things that people expect to see the changes immediately. And For me, it's we're all different. All of our drinking patterns have been different, or and I just say have some patience. So this time round, I wouldn't say I've lost as much weight as I did the first time round. But you know what, Louisa? I absolutely don't care
Yeah.
because I feel so happy. I feel so happy and so at peace with myself. And it's like I'm the type of person who doesn't like to not be in control. I mean, I'm not a control freak, but I like to know, I like to be in charge of my own destiny.
Yeah.
And what I found with the alcohol is, you know, I did not have any freedom at all. I was trapped. And it was like being trapped in a really bad relationship. And I'm just grateful this time that, you know, I've said I'm not doing it. I don't want to do it. And this is the difference for me from the first time round. I didn't put an end, you know, I never said it was forever. And I'd say to people, well, forever's a long time. So what?
Yeah, why not aim for it? I mean,
You know, and I think probably I just hadn't accepted. I think two words I'd use is acceptance and acknowledgement. Now I've had to sit here this second time round and really sit and do some difficult home truths with myself. Now again, rightly or wrongly, but I'm going to say it anyway. You know, I know relapse is, people do relapse, and you know, we've all gone through those day ones or numerous day ones. And but for me, how my brain took that and how it easily flipped it round, and to make it, you know, I was making an excuse for myself to go, everybody relapses. So we'll just start again another day. I'll have another day one because relapsing is acceptable. But I was just giving myself an easy way instead of sitting with a difficult chatter in my brain when things were noisy. You know, I would just say, well, a relapse is okay because everyone's allowed to relapse. And for me, that was, you know, I could make a simple excuse for myself to go and buy a bottle of wine and drink a bottle of wine and not accept a kind of slap on the wrist, because everyone would just go, yeah, it's okay. You know, let's just try again. But I had to be really honest with myself and say, no, that's what you've been doing.
Yeah.
Instead of just sitting and learning to deal with the emotions and the difficult times, you know, whether it's been a crappy day at work, whether something going on in my personal life, whatever it may be, I had to accept that I just had to stop making excuses.
It's that kind of, I know I used to do the same thing. I could find any excuse to drink. So what sort of things do you use now, Sue? What do you use now in those moments of difficulty to help you?
I mean, I've done a lot of them. I really find the hypnosis and the meditation, it's great. Absolutely. I've never done, in the beginning, I thought this is just crazy. This is not going to work. But, and I think I've spoken to you about this before. I actually get a physical feeling when I do my hypnosis, and it's like I've just got little waves underneath my skin, and I just feel it from my head all the way down my arms, my legs, my feet, my fingers. And it's just the most peaceful, blissful feeling ever. It's just, you know, that's my kind of escape, and it's amazing how it does just switch your mind off.
It does. I mean, isn't that what you're looking for when you're drinking? Is that at the end of the day, relaxation, switch the mind off, but it doesn't work. It hypes the system. You'll very often then mull on things after a drink and say things you don't mean. Or actually, if you do something like a hypnosis, a relaxation, it's a healthy way to get that feeling.
It does. I'm so pleased I tried, honestly, because I would have massively been missing out. You know, people talk about they think they're going to be missing out when they stop drinking. For me, you know, the whole work I've done on my mindset, Louisa, has just been game changing. You know, I've gone from someone who I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror in the mornings. I was disgusted in myself. I hated myself. And you know what it's like? You beat yourself up day in, day out. Now you know, I can look at me in the mirror and I know I'm presenting the best person that I am. And I know what I give to other people is the version of me that should have been having all along, not this kind of monster that I turned into when I'd had too much to drink. You know, I'm not proud of that. I'm not proud of some of the things that I've said. I'm not proud of how I damaged my relationship with my partner. And we've been together for kind of 8 years, but I have caused chaos. And you know, and I'm laughing. It's not funny at all. But you know, I'm grateful that even though there's been, especially kind of the last time, you know, I totally destroyed the trust. I remember talking to him, and I said, "No, what is it I have to do?" And he said to me one sentence, and it stuck in my mind, and it was mean and deliver on what you promise. So he was that used to me making promises and not delivering, because drinking just turned me into a liar, a cheat, and you know, I'm none of those things. You look at me now, and you know me pretty well.
I do. I know you sober. Yeah.
I'm honest as the day. I'd do anything for anyone.
Would.
And you know, all I've done is I've just kept being consistent. I've just kept showing up and being an example to myself, to other people. You know, it was really nice. We were out the other weekend, having food, and you know, he commented on, you know, how much he's appreciates what I've done and the work that I've put in, and you know, that it means a lot to him. And I mean, he doesn't have a problem by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, he's one of these people that I wonder actually why he drinks at all, because, or maybe I'm just jealous because I couldn't do that in the end. But he actually said, you know, I couldn't do what you're doing,
Wow.
as in giving up on making a decision to never ever drink again. So that was really, really, it's nice to, I'm not looking for pats on the back, so you know, you've done so well. I'm just, but it was nice to get, it's nice that he appreciates what I do for me, but what I do for our relationship. But you know, this ripples across my whole family, my work even. You know, I've lived on being a perfectionist, but I put so much pressure on myself over trying to be perfect. And what I realize now is, you know, none of us are perfect. I don't have to be perfect. All I have to be is just me.
Exactly. All
And
you've got to be is
that
Sue.
is enough. Yeah.
Yeah, that's more than enough. Yeah, you've just come so far, and to hear how low you got is so upsetting as somebody that knows you, and to hear how low alcohol took you. Because it's alcohol that does these things to people. You remove the drug, you remove the problem, don't you? As long as you've done some work on yourself as well.
And this is kind of my point earlier on. It's like a huge jigsaw, and it's just getting all of the pieces, making sure they're all face up, and just getting them all to align and fit into place. You know, drop the alcohol, your sleep starts to improve. And it's not just the length that I sleep, it's the quality of my sleep. So now sometimes, you know, I still have rough sleeps sometimes. I did not last night, the night before. But even 6 hours feels like a quality sleep. I mean,
Yeah.
I'm spoiled now. I have about 7.5 to 8 hours every night. But the quality, you know, I'm not waking up 3 o'clock in the morning, because that would happen, and straight away I'd be stimulated, I'd be worried, I'd be looking for the phone, I'd be full of anxiety. And from that point on, that would be me up for the day.
Yeah. It just totally sets you up in the wrong way, doesn't it, in the morning?
Yeah. Times I've sat on the floor of the shower and just wanted to just cry and just crawl down the plug hole and not come back out. But like I said, I'm sorry for having, you know, a pretty bad come down, a pretty bad relapse. But on the other hand, I don't think it would have been forever. That was never going to work. I had to kind of go back to basics. I had to learn some harsh lessons, and I had to start, you know, applying those lessons to my life now. And the difference is just huge.
Really is knocking alcohol off the pedestal.
And like I say, just that is just not gonna, you know, I'd set myself up to fail. You know, I don't like failing, but you know, I'd literally had set myself up to fail. Whereas now it's, you know, I know I can do this for forever. I'm not frightened to say I'm never gonna drink again. It's not going to happen. You know, I've known hell, and what I was scared of back then was, searching for my unknown heaven. But now I know that that heaven exists, and I'm not going back to hell. And that's what I see it as now.
So, what's your first benefit of sobriety? Have you touched on it at all?
It's definitely relationships, whether that be close relationships. I mean, I've always had a really good relationship with my son, but he knows he can trust me. But and even though he's older now, he doesn't need me, or he does need me, but he doesn't rely on me as much as he did in the past. But it's still nice to know that I'm here at the drop of a hat. If anything's needed or if I'm wanted, and I can do that. For me, work, I'm just so much more focused. I thought I was focused before, but do you know what? I wasn't. Now I'm like laser focused. I'm full of energy. I just want to carry on that. This is a really small thing, but I never once go to bed now, not have cleaned my teeth and not have cleaned my face and done my nighttime routine.
Yeah. That's not a
Because
small
it
thing.
was.
I think that's a massive thing because it's like self-care, isn't it? It's like the very basic level of self-care. But I did it all the time. I used to go to bed, not clean my teeth, makeup on.
Yeah, I've the number of bed sheets I've ruined because I haven't taken mascara and eyeliner off, and I mean, half the time I can't even remember going to bed, Louisa. So that tells you kind of I wasn't gonna brush my teeth and clean my face. But yeah, it's just more, like I say, small things. I've got my routines now that I do. And I really enjoy it, and like you say, it's looking after me. Small things like I like to often go for facial, or I like to go for massage because I just find it relaxing. And do you know what? It's a drop in the ocean compared to the money I was spending on alcohol. So I believe it's okay to spend that money on me to do that. And I don't feel bad about it for 1 minute.
And your exercise as well. Talk about your exercise because you are like a machine. In the Sober Rebel group, we're doing a move in May kind of check-in on a daily basis this month. And
Okay.
you are, I mean, I don't know how you manage it. You're cycling
I
how
mean,
far did you cycle the other day?
I think it was 29.97 miles.
Blimey, how long did that take you?
Yes, see, this is what I want. I go, oh, that's not very far. Or I walk 5 miles and I go, that's not very far. But I think because I've always done so much, to me, like I go out and consistently walk in the mornings before work. Between, I've got two routes, so it's about 3 miles or 4.2 miles. So because every morning I walk 4.2 miles, I think 4.2 miles isn't very far to walk, because to me that's just a normal walk at the moment. Because I've had quite a while off the bike because I had an injury in my arm, and then as you know, I've had problems with my respiratory system and stuff. So myself, my partner on a Saturday, we would consistently go out and do 50 plus miles on a Saturday. So I think 30 miles isn't far enough. But I am smashing it at the moment. I'm really, really chuffed that,
Yeah, re reframe needed on that one, I think. I think it's about sometimes we can compare to ourselves. So I always talk about don't compare to other people and despair.
Yeah, try and make a point of this on the group, because I know I have this thing of going, oh, I've only done X amount of something, and people think, say, I think it was a comment the other day, oh, I walked 3 point something miles, and I thought that was amazing. Yeah, I think that's amazing. And I'm not asking people to compare themselves to me or what I do, because I know I go to extremes at times, but that is just my personality. And as I try to point out, that's how I got into so much trouble with alcohol, because I just took it to extremes.
Yeah, that all or nothing, isn't it?
That's my personal thing. Like, I just love being out. I am, we talk about freedom from alcohol. I just love freedom to be outside. It really grounds me. It brings me so much peace, and I just love it. Whether I'm on my own or I'm in company, but you know me, I'll go to the lakes on my own and get up a mountain and sit there and take my photographs or just watch the world go by.
I mean,
It
it's we've
really.
met a few times, haven't we, actually? So sort of since just to so that people understand that we've got a friendship now, as well as, You were a client at one point, which you've shared. But it's a friendship now, and you're part of the Sober Rebel group. And it's amazing because you're so supportive. And we've met a couple of times. We met once in Cheltenham, which you'd already done, I don't know how many miles that morning, which is a great way to explore an area that you don't know. You're always staying away with work, aren't you? So you can get up, get out early and explore an area. And you're
Oh, yeah, definitely.
inspirations for me doing that, getting my trainers on. If we pull up in a motorhome somewhere, I'm like, right, well, I'll get up early and I'll go and have a look. I'll do a Sue. And I go and have a
Yeah.
little explore.
I was talking to one of the girls in the group, and the guy that I do my classes with, he'll always say movement is medicine, any kind of movement. So I know in Moving May, somebody had been dancing in the kitchen. We love to dance in the kitchen. It's just something to me, the stimulation you get mentally from just moving, whether it be 5 minutes around the block, whether it be 10 miles on the bike, whether it's a walk along the beach or along a lake shore, it is just so good for your brain.
It's move the body, calm the mind, I always say.
Yeah.
The mind gets busy when the body can be still. I mean, there's something to be said for you need to learn to still the mind when you still the body as well. But just in the first instance, if you're in a place that isn't great, get moving. Just get your trainers on, get out the door, go for a little walk. And it just you can feel, can't you, that change in how you're feeling.
And it's even those days, the best days to do it are the days where you really don't want to do it or you don't feel like doing it, because you know what, you go out, like say even if it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and you come back and you'd say to yourself, I'm so pleased I've done that. It's like, when we look at drinking and we look at kind of relapses, or we never see anybody on the group say, oh God, I wish I hadn't stayed sober yesterday.
Yeah.
Because you just wouldn't say that. It's the same about going out and moving. You don't come back and go, I wish I hadn't done that.
Yeah,
And I find the
exactly.
days that I can't be bothered, they are the best days, because I come back feeling even better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep moving, everyone.
Yeah, absolutely keep moving. And you certainly kept us moving because we met up in the lakes, didn't we, when we were up there in the
We
motorhome, and
did.
you took us for a 10-mile walk.
Yeah. Got to say, I'm so impressed with your children.
I was pretty
So
impressed with them. The
impressive.
idea was that they were supposed to come so far and then go back.
Yeah.
But I just don't think they wanted to miss out. They wanted to.
We were having such a nice time, and having a nice walk and chat, and I really loved Charlotte. Reminded me so much of myself. It's probably been a youngest child thing. I could just see the mischief in her face and thought,
Oh,
we're
she.
just going to get along just fine, and we did.
Yeah, you definitely got a new friend there. But it was phenomenal. And actually, whatever goes on, and I used a lot of movement and walking in the early days, distraction techniques in early sobriety. I don't know if you did the same thing, whether you sort of used exercise as that distraction, that witching hour, go and move instead.
I mean, it was more difficult for me, because even when I would still always exercise, even when I was drinking. Exercise has always been a huge part of my life. I suppose it was kind of, for me, the difficult time was being at home on my own. I know a lot of people worry about, going out to functions or say a wedding or a funeral or whatever it may be. I do not get triggered by those things. I've spent a lot of my life being sober, so I'm quite happy to go into pubs, go out for food, do any kind of social event, and be happy that I won't have a drink, because that's never been a massive thing for me. The difficult time for me has been being on my own at home, because that's where the problem began. I look now though and I think, how on earth did I get the time to drink? I don't even know where I got the time from, because I blink now and it's like 8:30, and I
Yeah.
like to be in bed by kind of 9:30, 10 at the very latest. I just fill my time up.
And it doesn't
So
take long, does it? When you first go sober, like that time opens up and it feels really daunting. You're like, what am I going to do? And then eventually you look back and you think, I have no idea how I made time for alcohol.
I'm talking about early days. I know kind of one of the things that I love doing, and I know you've done it yourself, was I found a love of jigsaws again. It's just so peaceful. And it takes, I haven't done one for ages actually, but yeah.
Yeah, flow state activity,
Yeah.
jigsaws. I got into that when I had that bit of that cancer scare back last year. I got into it because I thought I can't, I didn't feel like moving. It's the only time I've ever felt like moving. And it was only 2 weeks of waiting, and I'm so fortunate. But I didn't feel like moving. So I thought, right, I need to get into an activity here that keeps me focused, that means that my mind isn't sort of going off and telling stories. And jigsaws, absolutely amazing. My mum just bought me a jigsaw for my
Good.
birthday.
Oh, did he? Oh, you'll have to post about it. Might not be so easy with the dog now.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, he's a little monkey. So yeah, so a couple of the pieces will probably be eaten at some point.
Probably. Probably. I think just when you just touched on there, Louisa, about when you had your cancer scare. Obviously, you know, I've been or I had issues before Christmas, and there's been a lot of things going on, and probably one of the things is that's useful to touch on is in the past, if ever I've had to have blood tests, I've always worried that, you know, the cat was going to be out the bag, if they were going to test for my liver or anything. Now, every time my liver function has come back perfect. And that gave me, you know, when we're talking about relapses, and I would use that as an excuse. Again, when I've got positive blood tests back to say, you know, everything's fine, you're especially kind of liver and kidneys working lovely. I took that as an excuse that alcohol is not affecting me. Clearly, what I'm doing with my body isn't having a negative effect on it. And that, again, would give me the green light to say, well, you're doing what you're doing, but, you know, your body's holding up to this, so just carry on. And then when I had the issue, obviously, you know, about my heart and stuff, and they did say to me, oh, you know, probably best till we find out what the problem is, you know, try not to drink. So I said, oh, that's okay. I'm not drinking at the moment anyway. That's fine. And I asked the question, I said, could I have done this to myself through my alcohol consumption? To which they said, you know, we don't know why your heart's enlarged. We're just, that could be a reason. And that gave me, you know, such a shock. You know, as you know, I've seen a cardiologist, I've had an echocardiogram. My heart's actually in tip-top condition. In fact, I've seen my GP this morning who said, I have never seen a set of results so textbook. She was like, that is what you'd put in a textbook to say a perfect heart looks like. So we know there's not a problem with my heart.
Yeah.
But the difference I've taken this time is that's not a green light to carry on abusing my body. That is me to say, you know, you've been given a second opportunity. And I actually got a bit teary this morning. I had to go and pick a prescription up. So I went and had a Costa coffee while I was sitting waiting for it. And I got a bit teary because I was thinking, you know what? My body is absolutely amazing. The things it's done after the abuse I've given it, and you know, it's had some odd physical challenges. It's produced me a wonderful son. You know, I've hammered it with drink and cigarettes, but yet it just keeps on giving me. It keeps me alive, and I'm really, really feel so grateful. And this time, it's not a green light to carry on the way I was. It's, you know, you've got a chance here. It's kind of like, the door's here. Do you want to open it or do you want to leave it closed? And I'm going to walk through it and I'm shutting it firmly behind me. And I feel massively grateful that I have got a good body. I mean, I have abused it, but on the other hand, I have tried to look after it over the years. So yeah, I think that's important because there's probably people like me who worry about getting bloods done and, you know, the worst fears don't come true. So you just kind of like, well, I'll just carry on then.
Which is bonkers, isn't it? But I would have done exactly the same thing years ago, and I've not been in a position. I've always been incredibly healthy, actually, regardless of what I've done. But I haven't been in a position to have blood tests that often. But I have been worried when they've happened, and then obviously last year I did have to have blood tests, and they came back all clear. All clear, fantastic, liver function excellent, or whatever the readings are. It was all absolutely fine. But I hold my hands up and say that I probably would have done the same years ago, would then go, oh, well, that's all right then. At least I'm getting away with it.
But, like I said earlier, I have seen people in my family recover from alcohol addiction, but I've also seen the worst side of it as well, where it's, like I say, I've seen the effects of one binge too many, and there's only so much the body can sustain until you push it to its absolute limit. But I suppose it's just that the body is an amazing thing, and if you give it the chance, it will look after you. The
Yeah.
mind now is just so happy, it's unbelievable.
I always ask people for a piece of advice that they would give to somebody at the start of their sobriety, because a lot of people listen to this and they're sober curious or they're in the early days. What would you say to them?
I mean, I don't want to dress this up because it isn't easy, but I think you really have to have some honest conversations about, what it is. To get honest with myself, I started tracking, every unit I was drinking. I could tell you so much about units of alcohol and, but the patterns of my drinking. It isn't easy, but the reward you get for getting through those difficult times and just, having the self-esteem and the, some self-compassion is absolutely, it's absolutely huge. If I could go back to me, back in January 2023, I'd just put my arm around myself and tell me, do you know what, this is going to be okay. It's going to be hard, but you will be okay and you will get through this and life will be so much better. But I don't want people to think that they're going to miss out from anything, because you absolutely don't. That, like, say that holidays, the weekends away I've been to numerous kind of concerts and all sorts, and I've absolutely loved doing them sober. If you give yourself the permission that you're going to have a good time, you absolutely will. We don't need to have a drink to have a nice time. Just stick with it.
Yeah.
Search for the help. Do work, reading books. Some of the books that I've read, so just a couple, William Porter, which you put me on to, and Professor David Nutt. If you read those two books, or sorry, three books, you will not go back, because it's warts and all about what the alcohol actually is, because nobody tells you. Nobody tells you it can affect your own heart. Nobody tells you about the damage you're doing to your brain. No, nobody tells you. And I haven't researched this myself, but apparently if you take an HRT, it's not, you shouldn't be drinking alcohol, because you're leaving yourself open to, we know the risks with cancer linked with drinking alcohol. Why do we want to do that to ourselves? I don't get it.
I didn't know that about HRT.
Like I say, I've only had it, and it was somebody else I was talking to, and he, this is somebody who works with people with who struggle with alcohol, and he just asked if I was taking HRT, to which I said, yeah, I've been taking it since 23, and he said, yeah, you really shouldn't be, or people shouldn't be drinking, but we know of the studies that have been done, which I never knew before, was 6 units as binge drinking. Wow,
Yeah,
who
which
would have known? I
six
didn't know that.
units is, oh, it's just over a couple of large glasses of wine, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not even a bottle.
Yeah.
3 pints, maybe, if you drink pints.
Yeah, that's really good advice as well, writing down the units, keeping a track of the units. You can get those unit trackers. I had a spreadsheet. But if you can make it so that you can't deny what you're consuming, even if those numbers scare you, it's good to keep track of, because that happens. And I did that for about a year, 18 months, of keep trying to keep my units under a certain amount. And let me tell you, it was
It
nowhere near,
hurts.
it's just,
It
nowhere
hurts
near
me.
that government guideline.
No, and this is the thing. And I, Louisa, for me, I don't know if it's, is it the GPs that don't know enough about alcohol or any kind of misuse of a substance? Is it that they don't know enough, or is it just that they put their heads in the sand about it? You know, should they be telling you about HRT and drinking alcohol when they go in and say, oh, how many units do you drink on average? Because everybody lies.
And I was going
You
to say
know.
actually, and I didn't say at the time, I didn't want to interrupt you earlier, but when you went into the GP and you said, I've got a problem with alcohol, just to clarify, you did tell them then at how much you were drinking. And he reassured you that you were fine.
I didn't have a problem. I just needed to cook down.
Now, if somebody goes into their GP and says, I think I've got a problem with alcohol, do you not think that that's
No.
incredibly irresponsible at that point? To turn round to them and say, don't worry about it, just cut down.
I do. I think it's irresponsible and I think it's reckless because the courage it takes to actually stand up and admit that you've got a problem. You know, it takes a lot. It takes a lot to acknowledge that yourself, but to actually come and say it out loud and kind of that was me giving a cry for help, going, look, I'm struggling. I feel terrible. This is where I've been. This is what I'm doing to myself. Help me. And the only kind of advice I got was cut down. And I won't swear, but I was like, that is no use. And like I mentioned, I contacted a local recovery group, which is a charity. And when I went there to have a meeting, and I've got to say, I've had so much respect from them and so much kind of help and, you know, pointing for these smart recovery meetings, which are great. But he said, never ever does anybody refer themselves in here. He said, so the admiration I've got for you to come along and say, look, I need some help. Help me. He said, because generally people come here because of either being told by a medical professional or they've been in trouble with the police. And that's how they come into the service. He said, but you've come looking and you know you've asked for the help yourself. So he said, we know that you're serious. And you know, I'm deadly serious. And you know, for me it's great that those things kind of exist because unfortunately, not everybody's in a position where, you know, they can pay to have sort of private therapy. And for me, it was just about learning and putting as much kind of support in place as I possibly could so that I wasn't going to fall this time.
Oh, you're definitely not. Definitely not.
No.
I'm so pleased to have had this time talking to you and that you've come onto the podcast. It's been amazing. And thank you for being so honest and open, as you are. You know, that is exactly who you are. So thank you for taking the time, Sue. It's been amazing.
No, thank you for having me. It really meant a lot for me when you asked me if I would be willing to come on, and you know, it just kind of reinforces the work that I've been doing that actually just by being me, I'm more than enough. So thanks
You
for that.
are. You're amazing.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. If you'd like any support with your sobriety, then please reach out. You can visit my website, louisaevans.com, where you'll be able to send me a message, and you can look at some of the things I've put together to help you. There are links to my Dry January podcast, my audiobook on Audible. As a clinical hypnotherapist, as well as a therapist, I have created lots of different hypnotherapy recordings that you can listen to help you on any subject. You'll find those on the website too, alongside my Sober Resilience course. As a listener of the show, you can use the code SOBERREBEL to buy one, get one free on any hypnosis or relaxation recording. I really hope you enjoyed this show as much as I enjoyed recording it. Have a great day. Until next time.